Well, this is the last in this current series on Christian apologetics, and today we're looking at the subject of, did Jesus really rise from the dead? Is there any historical evidence that would tell us that Jesus is actually alive today? I came across an old newspaper story from 2008 where the vicar of the church there, Reverend Simon Gales, wanted to make the point of the Easter story to his congregation. And he said to the people, if you see something really weird happen and you go and tell it to your friends, how often do they believe you? Usually the answer is they don't. But then if more than one person saw that really weird thing happen and they go and tell your friend, it becomes more likely. And if a lot of witnesses see the same thing, then it becomes almost certain. And after he'd said that, he picked up a bunch of daffodils and he ate them. And he said to his congregation, now you go home and tell your family that this morning the vicar ate a bunch of daffodils and see if they believe you. Just because they might not believe you, it doesn't mean that the event is true. And if they don't believe you, then get them to ring up other members of the church and ask them if that really happened. He was making the point that with the resurrection of Jesus, there are so many witnesses to the events that when you look at it, the event actually becomes quite probable. Sadly, the illustration rather backfired for Reverend Simon Gales because daffodils are highly poisonous. And after the service, he started to feel very unwell and he was later admitted to hospital with poisoning. Fortunately for his congregation, he survived. That would have been a terrible Easter illustration, wouldn't it, if the vicar died because of eating daffodils on Easter Day. Well, the resurrection of Jesus is one of the more unlikely stories in the Bible. I mean, who in their right mind would ever invent such a story and expect other people to believe in it? But it's a story that's reported not just by one eyewitness, not just by the 12 disciples as eyewitnesses, but in fact up to 500 different eyewitnesses record that event. Now throughout history, of course, many skeptics have studied the events around the resurrection and they've tried to disprove it. One of the more famous ones was a journalist called Frank Morrison, and he set out as an investigative journalist to go into all what happened and who said what and why and what the historical accounts report, and taking his evidence from many different sources, he became convinced during his study that there was no other logical option than that the resurrection story actually happened. In the end, he had a personal encounter with Jesus and his life changed dramatically, and he ended up writing a book that's become a real Christian classic called Who Moved the Stone. I'd recommend that you buy that book and read it if you're interested to find out more detail about what I'm talking about this morning. So we start off by looking at the death of Jesus. Now, the fact that Jesus died has never been seriously questioned. Historically, both Jewish and Roman secular historians record the facts, and no one has ever questioned the fact that Jesus actually died on a cross. The reasons for his death was that during his life and because of his uncompromising preaching, he won himself many enemies, especially the authorities, both religious and secular, didn't like the things that he said. They didn't like the way that he gathered so many people into his cause, so he became a threat to the status quo. So they secretly arrested him at night and They subjected him to the mockery of a trial under the Roman leader called Pontius Pilate. Now, historically, we know about Pilate that he was the Roman governor between 26 and 36 AD. He was a ruthless and unscrupulous blunderer. Through his misrule, he precipitated several major riots in the country of Israel. On one occasion, he launched into a very extravagant building project. Because of that, he had to tax the people very heavily, and the people all objected, and they came, a few thousand people, into the city square, and they were shouting and protesting, and he got his soldiers to dress up as local peasants, but under their cloaks they had big clubs, and when they'd surrounded the crowd, they just clubbed them all to death, thousands of people. During his reign, he crucified literally hundreds of Jews. And so he was the man that oversaw the trial of Jesus. And with such a man, it's doubtful that anyone would hope that Jesus would actually get his justice. After the trial, Jesus was led away by the soldiers. And then first he was subject to a Roman whipping. Now, the whipping by the Roman soldiers was a horrific thing. They had these long whips with leather thongs, several leather thongs that were about 3 or 4 feet long. And tied to the thong were these jagged pieces of metal and bone that were designed to pierce the skin and to tear the skin as you were whipped. And then they drew the whip back across your back. It would rip your back to shreds. Many men died under a Roman whipping. The only thing that was merciful about it was that it made the crucifixion shorter, because the victim would have lost so much blood and would be so close to death that the actual crucifixion would be much shorter. So after his whipping, Jesus was led away to a small hill outside the town on the main road, overlooking the main road called Golgotha, and they laid down the cross on the floor horizontally, and then they took these large metal spikes and they hammered them through the victim's wrists and through his feet, and then they, using ropes, they pulled the cross up into the upright position, and it sort of jolted down into a socket that was made in the earth so that it would stay upright when they knocked a couple of pegs in to keep it in position. Crucifixion was one of the most horrible deaths that's ever been invented. And often people would literally hang on the cross for days. And as they hung there, you know, taking the weight, they'd struggle to breathe because all their weight was pulling their body down and compressing the chest, so it was hard to breathe. And so then they had to push themselves up on the peg that went through their feet so that they could gasp a few breaths of air. And then when the pain became too intense on their feet, then they'd relax again back to their arms until they were unable to breathe, and then they'd have to push up on their feet again. It was a horrific way to die. In Jesus' case, he died after just hanging on the cross for 6 hours. That was a relatively short period of time. But just to make sure that he was dead, history records that one of the soldiers took a spear and thrust it up from the, they were on the ground, of course, the soldiers, and the cross was elevated there, so the soldier thrust the spear up through the stomach and into the heart of Jesus, just to make doubly sure that he was dead. There's an interesting eyewitness account of that moment that it's recorded that as the spear went in, then blood and water poured out of the side of Jesus. I'm sure that the eyewitness just recorded it because it wasn't what they expected to see. Blood, yes, water, no. But it's one of those small details that actually verifies the historicity of the event. And a modern-day surgeon, Professor Rendell Short, the professor of surgery at Bristol University, he said this. He said, as a result of the physical agony endured by Christ, a condition of acute dilation of the stomach may have developed, and the spear would draw watery fluid from the stomach and blood from the heart and great vessels of the thorax. Needless to say, such a wound would be instantly fatal if the victim was not already dead. So after Jesus died, he was taken down off the cross and he was placed in a solid rock tomb. Now the authorities placed a 16-man guard outside the tomb because they feared that there might be trouble. Why did they fear trouble? Well, because before Jesus died, Jesus himself had predicted the manner that he was going to die in. He predicted when he would die, where he would die, by what method, and who would be responsible for that death. But the thing was that every time he predicted his death, he also predicted that 3 days later he was going to rise again from the dead. So the Jews were a bit wary that maybe something would happen, and all the more so because when Jesus was dying on the cross, there were three very unusual events that made them think that his death was unusual. So one was that there was a total eclipse of the sun, which of course they didn't understand scientifically. For them, they thought of it more sort of spiritually, that they nailed this good man on a cross and then suddenly the sky went dark for a period of 3 hours. I'm not sure if it was 3 hours, but it was recorded that it went dark for a long period of time. The second significant thing that happened was that there was an earthquake. So during the crucifixion, there was a significant earthquake that rocked many of the buildings in the city. Again, with their worldview, that would make them wonder if they had crucified an innocent man. And the third thing that was unexplained was to do with the huge curtain that hung in the Jewish temple, their most holy building. This temple divided the most holy place, the holy sanctuary, from the rest of the temple. Josephus, the contemporary Jewish historian, recorded that this curtain was about 60 feet tall and that it was about the thickness of a man's hand. And mysteriously, at the very moment where Jesus died, it's recorded that this curtain was ripped in two from top to bottom. So because of these three mysterious events that happened, the Jews wanted to make absolutely sure that nothing unusual could happen to the body of Jesus. So they placed him in the tomb, which was guarded by 16 soldiers. Now, what happened next is one of the world's greatest mysteries, because the body disappeared. Now, the fact that Jesus' body disappeared from that tomb has never been seriously disputed in history. And when you think about that, it's actually quite obvious, because if Jesus' dead body had remained in the tomb, when the disciples started going into the city and saying, "Jesus is alive, he's risen from the dead, we've seen him, you all need to believe that Jesus is God because he's alive again," what the authorities would have done is they would have gone straight to the grave, and they would have dragged the corpse out into the marketplace so that everyone could instantly see that this rumour wasn't true. And if they'd done that, Christianity would have died in that instant. The thing was, they never did. They couldn't find the body because the body had vanished. Now, what the Bible tells us has happened is recorded in Matthew's Gospel. It says this: after the Sabbath at dawn on the first day of the week, that's in other words, after Saturday on the Sunday, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning and his clothes were like snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. Some of the guards went into the city and reported to the chief priests everything that had happened. When the chief priests had met with the elders and devised a plan, they gave the soldiers a large sum of money, telling them, "You are to say his disciples came during the night and stole him away while we were asleep. If this report gets to the governor, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble." So the soldiers took the money and did as they were instructed. And this story has been widely circulated among the Jews to this very day. We know that the body vanished, otherwise Christianity would never have started. But now we're going to think through a few of the possibilities of what could have happened to that body. So the authorities started this rumour saying that the disciples stole the body. Now, to me, that is actually very improbable if you think about it. First of all, there was the Roman guard. In Roman days, if you were asked to guard, for example, a prisoner, your life depended on it. If the prisoner escaped, it was your life for his life. Because they were expecting trouble, it's absolutely certain that not all of the guards would have slept. Even if some of the guards slept, others would have kept watch. And because there were 16 of them, you can't imagine that all 16 fell to sleep at the same time. Now, assuming that all 16 were asleep, we know that there was a huge stone that was rolled in front of the tomb. The stone was so big that the two women that were going to try and put spices on the body on the Sunday, they didn't think that they'd be able to roll the stone away. So can you imagine these 11 disciples that were left sneaking up, stepping over 16 sleeping guards, if the guards were asleep, and trying to push such a massive stone out of the way without waking one of them up? That's completely impossible. Then if they had to fight the guards to overcome them, it's again impossible to imagine that 11 untrained disciples would be able to defeat 16 trained fighting soldiers that were fully armed with swords, spears and armour. The disciples were just fishermen, tax collectors, people like that. They weren't trained fighters. But more than that was the fact that when Jesus was arrested, the disciples were so petrified that they literally ran for their life. After a little skirmish where Peter drew out a little dagger and tried to defend Jesus, they literally all ran away because they were scared that they were going to get arrested too, and they certainly didn't want to be crucified. Their courage left them, Peter, as we know, denied Jesus, and the picture we have of the disciples is that they skulked quietly home and they were hiding behind locked doors for fear that they would be arrested by the authorities as well. More than that, they actually had no motive to steal the body because they lost their faith, really, in Jesus as the Messiah when he was arrested. Remember, these were men who had left their livelihoods. They'd left their homes and their families, and they'd spent 3 years walking around the countryside in their belief that Jesus was the Messiah. But in their understanding of what the Messiah was going to do, they believed that the Messiah was going to be a great political leader who would set the nation of Israel free from the Romans. And he'd establish sort of, you know, home rule independence for Israel, and he'd lead them as a literal king. It wasn't until very, very much later that the disciples came to understand the spiritual significance of Jesus being a Messiah. And so when Jesus was arrested and then crucified, they literally lost their faith. To them, a dead Messiah was a contradiction in terms, because he hadn't done anything significant. Of course, he'd healed the sick and he'd preached, but he'd not overthrown the Romans. And so they had lost their faith that he was who they thought that he was. And so they had no motive. Why would they want to steal the body of the guy who they thought was something, but in the end it turned out that really he was nothing? There's another interesting fact the resurrection story. If you were just inventing the story, you would never have put in the fact that the first witnesses to the resurrection were women. Because in the Jewish culture, women couldn't be witnesses in a court of law. And so if you were inventing the story, you'd have it that Jesus appeared to like one of the Pharisees, like Nicodemus, or one of the high-up followers of him, or something like that. You'd never put that he appeared first to women, because their evidence didn't count in a court of law. And there's another reason why we know that it couldn't have been the disciples that invented the story, because, you know, later on, all but one of the disciples died for their faith. So if you knew inside that Jesus hadn't really come back to life, but that you'd sneaked in and got the body and hidden it, and then you'd gone and tried to convince everyone else that he was alive, at the point where you were just about to be thrown to the lions, or crucified upside down, or beheaded as some of them were, and they said to you, we're going to ask you one last time, is Jesus alive? If you say yes, we'll kill you. Do you think all of them would have kept strong, knowing that they were dying for a lie? That's not possible, is it? In fact, there's a Roman record of the fact that the Christians were so happy when they were being thrown to the lion. They were singing so joyously that it put the lions off eating them. And this keeper of the lions was complaining that he couldn't get his lions to eat the Christians because they were so happy. So if the disciples didn't steal the body, what other possibilities are there? Well, some people say perhaps a grave robber came, you know, sneaked in the night and stole the body. Say again, Andrew. God could have took him to heaven. Yeah, well, we'll come to that in a minute. So this possibility, grave robbers could have stolen the body. I don't think that's a serious possibility, is it? There was the guards, 16 soldiers there. And also, everybody knew that Jesus had nothing. When he died,
the only possessions he had was this poor homespun robe that he was wearing. It was well known that he gave all his possessions to the poor. So there was no reason for anybody to want to come and rob that grave. Other people say, well, perhaps the disciples went to the wrong tomb. You know, maybe they went to a tomb of Fred Bloggs who hadn't died yet, and they looked in and they thought it was empty, but really it was actually just the wrong tomb. That couldn't have happened, because the two women who first discovered that the tomb was empty had actually gone the night before, or the Friday. They'd gone with Joseph of Arimathea, who'd lent him the tomb, and they'd gone to see where it was and to check everything was okay. So they knew the tomb. They'd been there before. And then when the women went and told the disciples that Jesus was alive, the men disciples, they thought, these hysterical women, you know, they can't trust them with anything. We'll go and look ourselves. So the men went themselves to check it out, because it seemed so unlikely. And they saw the empty grave clothes. Now, it's recorded in the Bible that the way the grave clothes were lying, it was not quite like this. It was like they wrapped it round and round with a long thin cloth, and then they wrapped the head separately. And it's recorded that the cloth around the head was still lying separate, and the other ones were lying there. And it was like the body had just been teleported out of it. So suddenly the body had disappeared, but the grave clothes were still there. So that couldn't have happened in the wrong tomb. There wouldn't have been empty grave clothes there. And of course, the disciples' claim was not just that the tomb was mysteriously empty. They claimed that they had met Jesus. They had seen him alive. Now, some people say, well, maybe Jesus didn't really die. You know, maybe he was there on the cross and they took him down, and in the cool of the tomb, after he'd rested a bit, you know, he came round and then he went back to Jerusalem and convinced them all that he had overcome death. That's also so unlikely, it's hardly worth considering, because it takes it out of you being hung on a cross like that. You know, especially after you've been whipped almost to death, and then you're there 6 hours on the cross, you've had a spear shoved into your heart. To think that then 3 days with no food or water or no medical attention, you can just, you know, jump up and roll away this massive stone that two or three women couldn't move, and then walk back to Jerusalem on your nail-pierced feet and convince everybody that you would never die. I mean, come on. Who's going to think that? I don't think anybody thought that that is what could have happened. Even if it did, why didn't the authorities just go and arrest Jesus again? They'd have caught him and they'd have killed him and made sure he could never come back. They'd have cut him up into 100 pieces or something like that. So I think that's not a valid possibility either. And then people say, well, Jesus didn't physically come back to life. He just sort of spiritually reappeared, like the disciples were having hallucinations or illusions. You know, they really wanted Jesus to come back, so they started seeing him when he wasn't really alive. And of course, we know that that couldn't have been the reason, because, like I said before, the authorities would have just brought the body out when they were saying Jesus is alive. But also, the thing is, with spiritual experiences like that, they're very individual. No two people have the same experience. And they usually happen sort of at night. Maybe you have a dream, or if you're meditating, or you've been drinking too much, or something like that. Weird things like that can happen. But it's recorded that when Jesus was seen, it wasn't in that sort of context at all. On one occasion, there were two blokes walking down the road, and they were joined by the risen Jesus, who started discussing with them things about the Bible, and they were chatting to and fro and discussing different things. I mean, that isn't how hallucinations happen. Another time, there was all of the disciples and probably a few others in a room having a meal, eating fish. And Jesus came, and all of them saw him, and all of them heard him saying the same things. In fact, it was so real that one of the disciples who didn't believe, he couldn't believe Thomas, he said, unless I see him myself, and unless I put my fingers in the nail holes, then I'm not going to believe. And Jesus goes, Thomas, look here. You said you wanted it, so come, put your finger here. It was that real. That's not a hallucination. In fact, writing a few years later, probably 20 years later, Paul the Apostle wrote that on one occasion, Jesus had appeared alive to over 500 people on the same occasion. And he wrote, it's in 1 Corinthians 15, he said, most of them are still alive, meaning that if you don't believe it yourself, all you have to do is go back to Jerusalem, and over 500 people, you can go and find them. You can talk to them yourself. You can ask what he said and how it was. So I think the possibility that it was just a spiritual resurrection and not a physical resurrection is really impossible. The only possible explanation is that Jesus came back to life again, as the Bible said. And like Andrew said, God raised him from the dead. An angel came. Yeah, the angel came and brought his body back, and he went to heaven. And of course, that explains everything else then, if that happened. That explains why these frightened disciples suddenly became courageous preachers who started preaching in the very same city that Jesus had died just a few days before. That explains why hundreds of people who witnessed Jesus dying themselves started believing. That explains why suddenly there was an outburst of miraculous healings. So much so that people that even Jesus didn't heal himself, like the lame man who sat at the temple gate that Jesus must have passed dozens of times and never healed, but he was healed. And so many people were healed that the streets were lined with sick people waiting for the disciples to just walk by. It explains why so many people, more than 500, many more than that, people started saying, we've met with Jesus ourselves, not just in Jerusalem, but all over Israel, and then beyond into the lands as the gospel was preached. People all over the Roman world started saying, we've met Jesus as well. We know he's alive because we've met him. And that's why today, all over the world, you know, if Jesus rose from the dead and he's alive today, that's why people like you and me and millions of others all over the world can say, yes, we've met him. He's changed our lives. Why is this all so important? Well, if Jesus did die, and if he did come back to life again, that's the most important fact of history. If he came back to life again, then it shows that he was God. And if he is God, if he's the Son of God, we need to listen to what he says. And we need to live in the way that he calls us to live. If there is a God who is all-powerful and you ignore him, that's the most stupid thing you can do. Because one day you and me will die and we'll stand before him and we'll have to give an account of our life. But on the positive side, if Jesus is alive, then we can get to know him. He can come into our life and he can help us. Paul, one of the writers of the New Testament, said that the same power that raised Jesus from the dead is available for all those who believe in him. That power would be quite handy, wouldn't it? You know, imagine the power that is needed to come into a man who's been whipped and crucified and with a spear in him, and to bring him back to life again, not just to life, but to raise him up to the right hand of God and give him life that's eternal life, that he'll never die again. That is serious power. The Bible says that that same power is available for you in your life to help you to overcome your problems, to help you live in a supernatural way, to give you eternal life so that you will also never die, but you will live with God in heaven if you give your life to Jesus. So this is the most important fact of history. And for those who don't know the Lord, I just encourage you to talk to them about this. Argue the point, discuss it and debate it. You can get the tape. In fact, you can get the whole series of these talks on CD if you want to give them away to your friends and relatives, or they're on the website as well. Jesus is alive. It's an indisputed fact of history that we celebrate every Easter, and we can be confident of our faith. And we need to be those who are not only confident, but who are giving it away. Amen. So that's all I've got to say today. And now let the celebration begin with these wonderful cakes.